With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Big weekend here in Memphis sports. Obviously, the Grizzlies taking on the New Orleans Pelicans in New Orleans later tonight. Ryan McDonough is a Radio.com Sports NBA insider. He's always brought to you by Indeed. Post a job today at Indeed.com/hire. Ryan, what's going on, man? Thanks for the time.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so lots to get to. Let's start with the All-Star game. The reserves were announced yesterday. As we know, coaches vote on those. No Ja Morant, and I don't think anybody here in Memphis was necessarily surprised. Rookies historically just don't get into the All-Star game. So I don't have a lot of outrage on this. But did he have a case, Ryan?
Yes and no. And what I mean by that, John, is, as you know, he's having a phenomenal year, a historically good year for a rookie. But, you know, I just go back to last year, and Luka Doncic had an even better year as a rookie for the Dallas Mavericks, and he did not get in the game. And for whatever reason, NBA coaches are very reluctant to put rookies in the game. I mean, Ja has been, for me, the clear rookie of the year so far, and I think he will win the award maybe unanimously when the voting's done at the end of the season. And Memphis has been the surprise team in the league this year, so he had all that going in his favor. But as I mentioned, coaches usually don't vote for rookies. And as you know, John, the Western Conference is loaded with talent and depth, especially in the backcourt.
Russell Westbrook, I think, is sort of the guy who, if you were going through the list, you maybe won. I mean, the Rockets have been better when he's not on the floor. Should he have been an All-Star this year, in your opinion?
No, but I would have another guy ahead of Ja Morant in that conversation. Maybe I'm a little bit biased since we drafted him when I was in Phoenix, but Devin Booker is putting up historic numbers for the Phoenix Suns, averaging over 27 points and 6 assists a game and shooting around 60% in terms of his true shooting percentage. So Devin's having a phenomenal offensive year, and he didn't make it. So, and that's why it's so hard, John, and I guess I understand both sides of it. Guys like Russell Westbrook and Chris Paul and Damian Lillard are deserving at some level, and they've all So I think they get the benefit of the doubt because they have been All-Stars before, because they have more of a body of work than a Devin Booker, or certainly, you know, than Ja Morant halfway through his rookie year. So I think, fairly or not, that does factor into the equation. But as all your listeners in Memphis know, there are many more All-Star games and other accolades in the future for Ja Morant.
Absolutely, and Devin Booker as well. I mean, when you think about the next wave of guys who are going to be in the All-Star game perennially, I think those are two of the guys that you start with there in the West. Back to Ja really quickly, Ryan. He has, as you know, he has grasped that position so quickly. I mean, you think about some of the great point guards in recent NBA history. It took Mike Conley, you know, 5 years. It took guys like John Wall some time. It has happened pretty much immediately for Ja. From your vantage point, what's made it so easy for him?
He doesn't get sped up, John. And that's really unusual for a rookie. You don't see a whole lot. We saw it last year and continue to see it this year with Luka Doncic in Dallas, and see it again in Memphis with Ja Morant. But those guys are rare, John. They come into the league and play at their own pace. You hear athletes, not only in the NBA but in all sports, as you know, say, boy, I got to the league and the game moved so fast. Everything was moving so fast.
Yep.
And space that used to be there is now gone. Shots that I used to shoot were taken away. And Ja, for whatever reason, he seems to have this pre-natural calmness to him, and the fact that he has a plan on the court, he knows what he wants to do, and he's also able to improvise, and he's very creative. When they take away his primary option, he has a counter, and is a really just unique, dynamic player that if I were a Grizzlies fan, I'd be really excited to watch him and Jaren Jackson and the rest of the Grizz young core for the next 5 or 10 years. For me, John, living here in Phoenix and being former GM of the Suns and a Celtics executive, the Memphis Grizzlies are the league pass team of the year as far as watching all 30 teams. Who's the most exciting? Who do I get the most excited about? And the main reason for that is Ja Morant.
Yep, you're exactly right. We are talking to Ryan McDonough, Radio.com, NBA insider. These calls are always brought to you by Indeed. Post a job today at Indeed.com/hire. One of the, I guess probably from a national perspective, one of the more unsung pieces of this very quick Grizzlies rebuild has been Dylan Brooks. He's been a true revelation for the Grizzlies. Scored 20 or more 10 times in January. The Grizzlies are 17-1 when he does that. He's obviously a restricted free agent. What kind of number can he get on the open market? And what do you do if you're the Grizzlies? Are you just saying, damn the number, we're just going to match whatever he gets because we need him as that third piece or second piece or what have you? What do you think about Dylan Brooks and the open market?
I'm a big Dylan Brooks fan. I love his toughness. I love his competitiveness and his aggressiveness. And he certainly had a tremendous year. And I think he'll be in the mix for most improved player, or, you know, in the conversation with the guys who have improved the most year over year. So I think Memphis is in a really good spot, John, because, again, as you mentioned, he's restricted. So the Grizzlies can match any offer he gets. Keep in mind that it's a weak free agent class, which I think helps Dylan Brooks. Yep. Because there aren't a whole lot of other available options. But the fact that he is restricted and the fact that Memphis has a very low payroll with most of their core players on rookie-scale contracts, makes it likely, I think, that the Grizzlies would match any offer. So my guess is that after the season, which may be after the playoffs, the way the Grizzlies are playing, that Zach Kleiman in the front office in Memphis would sit down with Dylan and his representatives and talk about the framework of a deal and what it would look like to try to prevent him from getting an offer sheet. And the way an offer sheet works is if one of the other 29 teams have enough salary cap space, they can put together an offer sheet, which is a contract that Dylan signs, and then the Grizzlies have a few days to decide to match it or not. If I were in Memphis, given Dylan's importance to that team and given the fact that, again, they have a very low payroll and a lot of exciting pieces going forward and their chemistry seems to be working out very well, I would proactively go to Dylan, see if we can even verbally agree upon a deal right around July 1 and not let him get out in the open market.
Yeah, that would certainly be ideal. Last thing on the Grizzlies before we move across the league, Ryan. We've talked to you before about Andre Iguodala. We've talked to you about Josh Jackson, who obviously they finally called up earlier this week. How active do you expect them to be at the deadline? Because it's kind of one of those catch-22s, right? I don't think anybody expected the Grizzlies to be as firmly in the playoff race as they are right now. At the same time, we know that the MO of this front office so far has been assets, assets, assets. This is a long-term sort of vision. How active do you expect the Grizzlies to be at the deadline, even if that means, you know, selling off a Jay Crowder who's been a great veteran for them?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'd start with Iguodala if I'm an executive looking at the Grizzlies and just see, you know, he makes his high salary, John, as you know, at $17.2 million. So there'll be a little bit of a game of chicken, and the Grizzlies have held the line, and they've been adamant so far that they won't trade him for anything other than a first-round pick. And now what Zach Kleiman and the guys in the front office in Memphis need to decide is by early next week, by Monday or Tuesday, if there is no first-round pick on the table, do they readjust their expectations a little bit? You know, are they willing to take a good second, especially if that pick is going to convey soon, so I say either in the 2020 or 2021 draft, and the pick will be in the early to mid-30s. That may be ultimately good enough. So I'd start there. I think that's where most of the conversations around Memphis will be centered. You know, you mentioned Jay Crowder. He's been a key piece for them, and I think given his role and the ability to re-sign him, he's probably a guy that Memphis wants to hang on to. They have other pieces as well with Solomon Hill's expiring contract. He makes around 12.8. You mentioned Josh Jackson, who had his fourth year option declined on the rookie scale. He makes about $7 million. So they could really get to any trade range. But my guess, John, is given the success they've had this year and given how far ahead of schedule they are, I think they'd be hesitant to make any big moves that would shake up the core of their roster.
Interesting. We are, of course, talking to Ryan McDonough, Radio.com, NBA Insider. These calls are always brought to you by Indeed. Post a job today at Indeed.com/hire. Grizzlies on the road tonight at the Pelicans. Zion has been pretty good so far. I mean, he had that explosive, electrifying fourth quarter in his debut. But obviously, Ryan, they're being really cautious with him. They are really monitoring his minutes. And how difficult is that organizational balance? You're wanting to make the playoffs, you're wanting to make a run and give your fans something to get behind there in New Orleans, but at the same time you're also keeping in mind that Zion is a 10, 12, 14 year investment. So can you just kind of touch on the organizational balance? Maybe Alvin Gentry wants something and the organization wants something different. Like, how do you sort of juggle that?
Yeah, great question, John. And the group in New Orleans, I'm very familiar with their training staff led by Aaron Nelson and Tom Maestad, worked with us when I was general manager of the Phoenix Suns. And, those guys are supposed to do what's in the players' best long-term interest. And it's always difficult. There's always a push-pull, especially when the head coach and players in the locker room want a talent like Zion on the floor. Everybody understands why they would want that. At the same time, John, I look at New Orleans and Memphis fairly similarly as franchises where they're not going to win a championship this year. Their goal should try to be a championship contender 3 to 5 years from now. So I think if you look at it through that prism, it makes it a little bit easier that, okay, if the Pelicans have to lose a few games or if they have to limit Zion's minutes and that hurts them in a few games and they ultimately bow out and don't make the playoffs and somebody else does, they have to be okay with that organizationally. You know, put it this way, John, I think about Zion Williamson over the next 10 years rather than the next 10 games and the next 30 or 40 games this season, and I think New Orleans will continue to be cautious with him until they're confident that he's fully healthy and able to go a full 35 or 40 minutes in their rotation.
When you think about the Southwest, I mean, it's kind of absurd, isn't it, Ryan? I mean, you got Luka in Dallas, you've got Zion in New Orleans and Ja in Memphis. I mean, when you think about the future in the NBA, a lot of it happens to be in the Southwest Division. That's pretty absurd.
A lot of young talent, you know, in the division, John, and up and down the Western Conference. I mean, even looking at Phoenix with Booker and Ayton, De'Aaron Fox in Sacramento,
yep.
Karl Anthony Towns, so I thought before he got injured, was off to a phenomenal start offensively. The Timberwolves are in 14th, John, you know, so just yep. up and down the division. And that's what makes it so hard, going back to our previous comments about Ja Morant and the All-Star game, is that, you know, he probably is deserving, but there are a lot of players in the Western Conference who are deserving, who aren't in the top 12, and that's something I think the league should look at is you know, expanding rosters, the expanded rosters from 15 to 17 players among the 30 NBA teams a few years ago. I think the league should really look at expanding All-Star rosters. John, what's the difference if the league had 15 players in the All-Star game as opposed to 12? That would be one per team on average in each conference, and that would allow players who are deserving, like Ja Morant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal, to be in the All-Star game in a few weeks.
Absolutely agreed. Speaking of perhaps one of the best players to have never made an All-Star team, Mike Conley missed his 20th game of the season last night for the Jazz, right knee soreness. Now, the Jazz are fine. They're 32-16. Donovan Mitchell's an All-Star, but the Mike Conley experiment doesn't really seem to be working there, and maybe that a part of it is because of the injury. And I know this sounds kind of crazy because the Jazz really did want Mike Conley. They coveted him. But could he be a candidate to be moved at the deadline? Is that something that you would consider if you're a Jazz executive?
That's a fair question, John. It hasn't worked out as planned in Utah. I think everybody understood the deal from both sides. Certainly from Memphis' side, going younger and rebuilding Mike didn't make as much sense. And then from Utah's side, you know, given what they gave up, it certainly seemed to make sense and give him some more offensive firepower and another playmaker in the backcourt to help Donovan Mitchell. But it hasn't worked out. To answer your question more directly, I don't think Utah will try to move him, John, because honestly, I think it may be difficult to move Mike Conley, given his age, his lack of productivity in Utah,
yeah.
and given his contractual situation, which is, as you know, this year he makes $32.5 million.
Yeah.
Next year he has a player option for $34.5 million. So I don't think there are many teams that have the ability to take on that kind of contract, that would want to take on that kind of contract, given Conley's recent injury history and his play in Utah, and also the fact that he controls it. Because look at it this way, John. The player options are usually bad for the team. If the player stays healthy and plays well, he usually opts out and wants a longer-term deal. Or, you know, historically, the only way guys opt into a one-year deal is if it's a super high number, like $34.5 million is for Mike Conley, or if the player is injured, then he certainly opts in to get the certainty of that guaranteed salary.
Yeah, kind of a tough spot for the Jazz, for sure. And then last thing, Ryan, if you ever wondered about Kobe Bryant's influence in the NBA, I mean, just look across, you know, the league on Sunday in those games, and then the following days, I mean, it looked like every player to a man was affected by the tragedy that happened over the weekend. For you, as somebody who I'm sure you've been around Kobe, you've worked at the highest level, you know, in the NBA, what's going to be his lasting legacy in basketball?
Boy, I think for me there are two different thoughts that come to mind when you mention Kobe Bryant. The first is when I was in the Celtics front office, when we had the great battles against the Lakers, playing the Lakers in the finals in 2008 when the Celtics won, and then 2010 when the Lakers won. That stands out, just how competitive he was, how tough he was, how willing he was to do whatever it takes to win a game. And keep in mind, John, in Game 7 of the 2010 finals, Kobe Bryant was 6 for 24 from the floor. floor, but I think he had 17 or 18 rebounds in that game and basically willed his team to victory. You know, in a hard-fought, brutal, low-scoring game, I believe the Lakers won 83-79, and that was obviously tough for us in Boston. So that's the first thing that comes to mind as a player. And then I think more recently, John, his post-playing career, the impact on young players, the mentorship of young players. We had Devin Booker in Phoenix and Kobe Bryant as Devin's basketball idol. And you look at even the mentorship of veteran players in their prime, like Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and others, but the younger players in particular, like Devin Booker and Trae Young in Atlanta, the impact he had on them. And he was their idol, John. You know, those guys looked up to him like players of older generations looked up to Michael Jordan or Larry Bird or Magic Johnson. And I think that'll be his lasting legacy. And I think those young great players who are in the next wave in the NBA will continue to honor his game, by remembering him and then also emulating some of the stuff he did on the playing court.
Yep, there's no doubt about that. Hey, Ryan, man, this was terrific, man. Appreciate the time, as always.
Yeah, John, thanks a lot, and feel free to give me a shout next week. If the Grizz make a move, we'll come back on and break it all down.
You got it, man. Thank you. Talk soon.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right, thanks, John.
Yep, he is Ryan McDonough, radio.com, sports NBA insider. Post a job today at indeed.com/hire. Always do appreciate his time. It's interesting because, you know, a couple different things. One is his thoughts on Dylan Brooks. I mean, just, you know, basically verbally agreeing to an offer sheet. I mean, that would obviously be ideal for the Grizzlies at this point. We've drawn the comparisons to the Oklahoma City Thunder back in the day when you had KD and Russell Westbrook and James Harden. Like, this feels like it's kind of your Harden, right? Like, you kind of want to get that done.
I thought it was interesting from a GM's perspective, basically, where he said you preemptively give him something to look at.
Yeah.
Like, in other words, so you've got to figure out if you're the Grizz. This is a little bit of chicken, but you don't want to be a jackass as a franchise and go, we're going to wait to see their offer.
Oh, for sure.
In other words, you want to put
take the lead.
You might want to put $13 million on the table and just go, here's a $13 million deal over 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I think it's imperative that they keep him around because
by larger
been,
than that,
you know, he might be their second option. Let's be honest.
Here's the thing that surprised me about Brooks is he has imposed his will on games where he has no business scoring 20 points a game like that, and he does it.
Yeah.
He's doing it now game after game.
10 times in January. I think he's a huge piece of this rebuild in the future. And then, you know, I don't think people realize just how bad it's been for Mike. He's missed, you know, almost half the season.
I mean, hate it for him, actually. Like, this doesn't give me any satisfaction
It's been tough to watch, you know, because the Jazz really wanted him. And it made, like, the Jazz, when you thought about the NBA in the preseason, like, they were kind of the darlings, right? They were they were the team that everybody kind of thought would make some noise and maybe make a Western Conference Finals appearance, you know, in the absence of Golden State, right?
Like, so, they're out.
But you know, I mean, with no Mike Conley, no healthy Mike Conley, it seems like, and they're fine. They're 32-16. They're still going to make some noise, but that experience
that kind of sucks too, because you're joining a franchise to be like, I'm the guy. Like, I'm supposed to be the starting point guard for whatever team I'm on.
Yeah.
And you join and you're making $35 million a year or whatever, 33, you know.
Yeah.
And you go and like, you're good without me.
Yeah.
Like, that's very, and he already bought a house there. That's like, you know. It's tough.
But thanks to Ryan McDonough for joining the show today. We'll come back, wrap this thing up. Jason and John, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.